Today on With the First Pick, we're finding the next standout rookie from the 2024 NFL draft class. A year ago, Rick, there were questions about C.J. Stroud. Can he replicate the Georgia game consistently with one of them? And Sam Laporta, because he was really used in Iowa's offense. And even Brian Branch, because he ran that 4.58 40 at the combine. And the list goes on and on. But we'll talk about some of the players in this class who could potentially have breakout rookie seasons. We'll also hit on some mailbag questions and a couple of five-star review prospects. I'm Ryan Wilson. That, of course, is Rick Spielman, who is in an undisclosed location. This is episode 145, Rick. Before we get going, as always, man, we're getting close. How many days until the 2024 NFL draft?
Yeah, it's amazing how this is creeping up on us. And it's like, it's almost to the point where I'm done watching tape. I can't watch any more guys. I can't talk about them anymore. Let's just get the show on the road. And just for our listeners out there, there are 15 days until the 2024 NFL draft.
Yeah, absolutely. And it is wild because I remember when that our trusty countdown board had a 2 at the beginning of it, and now we are 0-1-5. By the way, we're going to do some five-star review prospects today, so thanks for that. And thanks to all you guys who have been hitting the five-star button on the old Apple Podcast machine. Keep that up. We really appreciate it. And leave comments. Oh, by the way, 15. And speaking of comments, some famous 15s. Anyone in the old Rolodex?
Yeah.
Who you got?
Me.
You were number 15?
That was my high school number and my college number. Number 15.
Number 15. And what number were in the picture with your brother with Detroit?
Nah, that was the camp body number, 94.
Well, at least it was under 100. That's a good sign.
Yeah, at least I made it. Close. I almost didn't get under 100, but I was like 94. All right,
make a note, Debo. Rick Spielman is number 15. Some other nearly as famous, not quite as famous, number 15, Bart Starr. Where did Bart Starr go to college? You know that one? That I don't know.
No, I don't.
All right, I have to look that up.
I don't think they went back to college back in those days.
They just went from the coal mine to the football field. Some guy named Patrick Mahomes, I think he's going to be a pretty good player one day. And Tim Tebow.
Bart was Bama before you get people all upset.
Oh, Alabama. How would we forget that one? Thank you.
How do you not know that one, Rick?
Yeah, that was a layup. Bart Starr, Joe Namath, Mac Jones, in that order. All right. But thank you guys for the five-star reviews and leave comments on the YouTubes and the thumbs up and all those things because it helps us out. We're down the stretch here. I think Debo's been pretty happy with how the viewership and the listenership has gone, but there's always room for improvement. At least that's what Debo tells us every day after the show, Rick, when he's done yelling at us. All right, let's get to this. Finding the next, .. And we'll start at the top with Coleridge Bernard Stroud IV, who exceeded everyone's expectations on planet Earth, except for maybe CJ's. There's no CJ Stroud in this draft class, I don't think, in terms of productivity meeting expectations.
Not so fast. You don't know that.
All right. Who's your guy?
Caleb Williams. And
let me set this up, though. So there are fewer questions. I'll ask the question you can answer. There are fewer questions about Caleb than CJ coming out, I think. But you're saying that Caleb, give me a percent chance that Caleb has a chance to have something similar. He's not going to match, I don't think, CJ's production as a rookie. So two questions.
I would say if he ends up in Chicago, I'm going to say 95% or higher.
That he has similar type CJ production?
Yes.
All right, Debo, grade that. Because that sounds something that Ryan Wilson would say.
Is this the boldness scale?
Yeah, the boldness.
Yeah, we're supposed to do bold, right? What am I going to say, 50-50? No, that's
I would expect it from the greatest QB prospect ever, but
that's true.
I mean, statistically, CJ, you could very much make a case, the best rookie quarterback season of all time.
Yeah.
So if you're getting 95% to that, that's automatic rookie of the year, Bears in the playoffs.
Playoffs.
I'm going to say they only have 4 draft picks, but if they get Caleb along with Allen and along with DJ Moore in the run game and they play better defense the way they're playing, they can add another pass rusher. As he grows and learns, just like CJ did, he had some early ups and downs, but eventually figured out if they handle him the right way, like Bobby Slowick handled CJ, not like they handled Bryce Young. And those are things we can't say, but if they handle him the right way, he has more than enough ability athletically. He can make some unique throws. Wow. He is going to have almost right at 95% of what CJ Stroud did.
All right. We were just joking before the podcast, Debo, that Rick has been saying some viral things recently. This one might be the next one in line. So clip that and let's look forward to those comments. Look, man, CJ is special. Caleb's special. But it's just always the trying to figure out the transition. But I think the Bears have been a laughingstock in recent years, but it feels like this roster, as it's currently constructed, is in pretty good shape to help a young player, especially someone who's as dynamic as Caleb Williams. And perhaps another quarterback going there wouldn't have quite the success in this class, but the Bears don't have to worry about that. All right.
Nope. And the only difference is the one thing to note is that CJ, and not that it matters, but Caleb's going to have to figure out how to play in some of those elements in December and January. Yep.
That's true.
CJ was indoor. So there's a little bit of element there. And the whole key and the critical piece is how Shane Waldron, the new offensive coordinator in Chicago, handles them. And if they handle them the wrong way, then I'm going to be totally wrong on this.
Yeah. And, you know, you could argue that Luke Getsy and Justin Fields weren't a match made in heaven, and both OC and player are elsewhere than Chicago. So Shane Waldron had success in Seattle with Geno Smith. So hopefully that carries over to Chicago. My guy, Caleb Williams, is a layup. You make fun of me for low-hanging fruit. I'm going Jaden Daniels, Washington number two, if that's the direction they choose to go in. Jaden Daniels, no player had more success in terms of elevating his draft stock in 2023 than Jaden Daniels. I think he has a chance to continue that arrow pointing upwards. He is 23 or 24, so he's a little older, but that doesn't mean there's not room to grow as a quarterback. And I think, again, in the right system, and that's the caveat with all these quarterbacks, I think Cliff Kingsbury makes a lot of sense. And some of the comps we've heard for Jalen Daniels is RG3. I don't think he's RG3. Like,
throws better.
Throws better. He's a little bigger player, right?
Yeah, RG was long and lean. But I don't know. I don't know what RG was coming out, but they're both
similar. I don't think he was 6'3" and a half or whatever. But my point is this. I think that in the right system, and I think Cliff Kingsbury has a lot of experience with athletic quarterbacks who are not just good athletes but can throw the ball down the field. I think that offense can hum as well. You lean on the run game, and hopefully
the defense. What if he ends up in New England?
That's not going to work. Not in year one.
Not then. So you're assuming that the Commanders.
He needs to go to Washington. Yeah. I mean, if Caleb went to New England, let me ask you this. Would Caleb be as dynamic in New England than as Chicago in terms of your scenario?
Probably not.
Yeah.
But I don't think any of these three are going to be – you know, and who knows? We're just guessing like everybody else out there. But I think New England is going to take some time, especially offensively. Defensively, they'll hang in there because I think they're going to have a good defense. But they're going to take some time offensively. So, but Alex Van Pelt, I think, will do a good job with the better quarterback. But you may not see the return for a year or so.
And that's because they have other needs. In Washington, you have Cliff Kingsbury. They got Austin Eckler, who I think is going to help a young quarterback. And, of course, Brian Johnson, the Alabama running back they drafted a few years ago. And then you have Scary Terry and Jahan Dotson. Maybe they need one more receiver. They do have De'Ami Brown, who's still looking to hit his stride out of UNC. But I think if you have a situation where you can lean on the run game and let Jaden do his thing in space, and he can avoid the big hits, which is, in that sense, that's what doomed RG3 back in the day, I think he can be special. Now, he throws a good deep ball. He was inconsistent on his pro day. That doesn't really concern me. But I won't say 95% of C.J. Stroud. I'll say 67% of C.J. Stroud would be an absolute grand slam. C.J. Stroud was the best player ever as a rookie, as Debo just noted.
All right. Bold predictions. I thought it was bold prediction Wednesday today.
Yeah, but your bold is usually using bold. Mine is lowercase and written in skinny font. All right, next up. The next second round impact wide receiver like Jaden Daniels or Rashee Rice, two guys. I'll just say this. I'm sorry, what's that?
Jaden Reed.
Oh, Jaden Reed. What'd I say?
Daniels.
Yeah, you can't get off him. Let's go. We're moving on to the next position.
You can't read. Thank you for that. Jaden Reed out of Michigan State went to the Packers and Rashee.
Man, Debo's fired up today, too.
He's looking for new mansions now that he's got his promotion. He's got to go house hunting.
Yeah, someone tinkled in his Wheaties this morning.
Tinkled in his Wheaties.
Let me run through some more quarterback alma maters that you don't know, Rick.
He was waiting to use that one, Rick.
Where did John Elway go? I don't know. Maybe Boston College?
No, yeah. John Elway went to Stanford. Come on.
I know, Rick.
Okay.
I love that Rick got you on the one that you knew the answer to. That Alabama Bart Starr thing is a huge embarrassment. More for Rick than me, because Rick's been in the league for 30-plus years, but whatever. All right, so Jaden Reed, Rashee Rice. I think Rashee Rice is another example of a guy who landed in the right place in Kansas City. I like Jaden Reed more than Rashee Rice coming out. How did you feel about those two?
Loved Jaden Reed when he came out of Michigan State. I thought he was an under slot that was very productive and had some return skills as well. Rashee, I thought, looked faster and more twitchier than I thought coming out of college.
Yeah.
And I think that he looked slower at the beginning of the year, but once he caught on where he didn't have to think, then you started to see a different player the second half of the year for Kansas City.
All right, you've targeted two players as potential second-round impact rookies early on in the proceedings. Ricky Pearsall, who I think you would marry if you had that opportunity. You are a huge Ricky Pearsall guy. And then Roman Wilson, who wasn't asked to do as much as some other receivers in this draft class, but that's just a function of the Michigan offense. Tested extremely well, had a good Senior Bowl, and when he was had the ball in his hands at Michigan, he was a playmaker for sure. So these two guys, you think they both go in round two?
Yes, I do. I think both of them have an opportunity. May, depending on the run at other positions, but I think they're both second-round talents. So I tried to do, since Debo never has specific instructions, so I took some liberties in this. So Rashee Rice and Ricky Pearsall, kind of the same body types, and Jaden Reed and Roman Wilson, more that slot-type guys. And I'll just never forget, that just can't get out of my head, the incredible catch that Roman Wilson made in the back of the end zone over a DB in the Nebraska game. And I think that once he gets into an offense, and he's going to be a much more productive pro than he was at the collegiate level, just based on the systems that they ran.
Also caught that splitting hairs pass between two defenders in the Ohio State game in the end zone, which I think Denzel Burke almost had the strip recovery that was a whole nother conversation, but that was one of the throws you liked from JJ. I'm not sure JJ saw the underneath linebacker or whatever, but that was a great catch. Basically a no look catch by Roman Wilson there. He's a really good player and he plays primarily in the slot, but the speed is what separates him. And Ricky Pearsall feels more like a technician. It feels like he's been around forever, but he feels like a pretty solid route runner. Who are you taking first if those two guys are on the board?
Boy, that's a tough one.
You're taking
Pearsall.
Yes, of course. I think, and you won't be surprised to hear this, Rick, I read the instructions and understood them, but I may have made not a grave error, but a mistake. Jaden Reed and Rashee Rice, both guys that can play inside and out and thrive inside. Ricky Pearsall and Roman Wilson are guys that thrive inside. I went with Troy Franklin at Oregon State, who plays primarily outside. Let me throw this one at you. Do you think it's tougher for young wide receivers to have success outside than inside at the NFL level?
I think they have to learn how to get off press, because I don't think they see it enough in college, where when you're in the slot or inside, it's hard to get, especially if you're, you know, lined up in the slot off the line of scrimmage, that it's harder to get jammed or pressed on your release. So I think it's easier for them to learn how to get out of routes. When you got guys at this level, at the NFL level, they're going to press you at the line of scrimmage and you're outside. I think that takes some time to develop your release and things like that.
Yeah, so Troy played mostly outside. About 80-20 was the split between outside and in the slot. And he's undersized is the other thing in terms of his weight. He's plenty tall. He's almost 6'2", but he's only 176. Ran a 4.41, and I thought he showed on tape that he could stack receivers. I thought he actually ran through arm tackles in space at times, but go ahead. What are you going to say? You didn't think so?
He stacks DBs. He doesn't stack receivers. He stacks receivers maybe when he's in line
goes
before the games.
Stacks the defensive backs. He stacks the receivers in the pregame warm-up. Thank you for that. But I thought he did run through arm tackles, even though being slight of frame. But to your point, when you're 176 and you're going up against Patrick Surtain, it's sometimes a little more difficult than getting off press when you're facing some of these Pac-12 cornerbacks. That said, I think he's a day two guy. There's been some conversations that he sneaks into the first round. I don't think that happens. And I was trying to think of a comp for someone that size. He measures similarly to Jameson Williams, and Jameson's a little more juiced up, I think. They both struggle with drops at times. He had like 8 drops last season. And then the other guy that popped into my head, remember Paul Richardson out of Colorado, I believe, the burner who went to Seattle. So that type of player, and I think Paul was a day two pick as well. But the outside thing concerns me, so we have to see how he handles that transition. But I think he's a really good player who should be off the board, the top 75 or so picks. All right, here we go.
Well, you want to know, my biggest thing on him is his play strength.
Yeah.
So that's the thing when he's in contested situations. And I went back and watched the Washington game during the season where he just lit it up. He had big plays all over the field. And then all of a sudden they got physical with him in that championship game, the Pac-12 championship game. And I think it shut it. He only had like four catches that game. So that's the thing to where he has to improve the most is his physical strength and the physicality that he's going to have, that he will face versus these NFL corners coming out.
Is that a conversation for the strength coach? Who are you talking to figure out if he can get stronger?
Yeah, no, we'll talk about that. They'll look at his body frame. Can he add? These guys are going to physically mature more. Right. But he has all the athletic traits and the speed you're looking for. They just got him. He's just going to take some time to develop the strength part of it. So, and the other point is, before you move on, is that Debo did Jaden Reed, Rashee Rice. That's two. I did Ricky Pearsall, Roman Wilson. That's two. You, on the other hand, took liberties and just said, I'll just do this guy and move on.
I just do this guy and move on. Yeah. I had to make a sandwich.
Yeah.
I didn't want to bog the show down. We got a lot to get to. I thought.
Well, I'm just going off of what Debo said to do. He put two. I put two names.
Okay. All right. Well, this next one.
Just kind of highlight. I didn't want to. Both of them had very, I would say, equal seasons as impact second round wide receivers. So that was kind of more of the focus.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It wasn't explained in the instructions. Instructions.
I know. Can you imagine, like, the notes Rick's wife has to leave him around the house? Make sure he takes the trash out. You didn't say put it in the trash can. You just said take it out. So I threw it in the yard. All right, Rick. All right. And he's stalling, by the way, Debo, because he doesn't want to get to this next name.
I do.
Mr. Puka Nacua. Stud, late round wide receiver, as Debo put into the rundown. Fifth round pick. Ran in the 4.5s, time faster than that in terms of his play speed. We've been over this a million times. And we talk about C.J. Stroud having a breakout, best ever rookie quarterback situation. Puka Nacua was the best ever rookie wide receiver. And interestingly, on your list, you put two names here, even though there's one on there, but whatever. You put one of my guys. You stole one of my guys. Also noteworthy, Puka can play inside and out, and he was a great inside. He was a great blocker, and that was a big part of his success. Doesn't show up in the stat sheet necessarily. But you also went with slot guys here, and again, I fell for the old dumb trick, and I took an outside guy. But let's start with you. Who are your two inside guys that you like?
Malik Washington, Virginia. I think he's a quick-twitched, undersized
slot. You told me
receiver.
He was slow, Rick.
He plays slower than he timed, but okay. The one thing I do, I love his physical build. He's built like a running back. He catches everything. He has no fear coming inside, and he has some run after catch skills. Is he going to be a vertical stretch guy? Probably not, just because of the lack of length. But this guy is take out the speed part of it, even though he ran faster than I thought he was going to run. He's a good football player, so. But I think he'll be a Saturday guy. My other guy was Jacob Cowing.
Here, wait a second. Before you go to Jacob Cowing, let me throw this at you. So he was 5'8", almost 5'9", 191, ran the 4.47. My comp for him was DeMario Douglas out of Liberty last year. How do you like that?
But DeMario Douglas was skinnier.
He was short, though. Yeah, 191 is pretty thick. That's a bowling ball.
Yeah.
You got a Rolodex from a leak? I'm just trying to set the stage here.
Not as tall, but thickly built was KJ Osborne, who we had in Minnesota.
Another guy you're just stealing running back draft reports from. Okay.
Sorry, I wrote him up. It's my fault.
It's your fault. Jacob Cowan, another slot receiver out of Arizona, who I also like a lot and who also didn't fly under the radar. We didn't talk about him probably enough from his Senior Bowl performance, where I thought he had a pretty good week.
Yeah, no, quick twitched, really good athlete. I think he has enough speed. The size is the only concern. I think he's going to help in some kind of capacity as a returner. Small target down the field, but I think with the way the NFL is spread out, these slot receivers are becoming more and more valuable. And these are some Saturday guys that I think have an opportunity to really contribute and help a team next year.
Also 5'8", like Malik Washington, but 22 pounds lighter at 168. So that's that's the difference there. Ran a 4.38, so you got to catch him. Malik or Jacob, who are you taking first? It feels like it just depends. Okay, all right.
Just because of the physicality.
And I think, did you say this or have we talked about it? Jacob Cowling's more of a body catcher than a hands catcher.
Yeah, but yeah, he's pretty elusive after the catch and quick as lightning get into and out of his cuts where he's going to be able to separate underneath.
My guy, and I've talked about him a lot in previous weeks, or at least a little bit, Pitt's wide receiver Bub Means, another outside guy. What does that mean?
Bud.
Oh, I thought you didn't. I thought you were like making the noise because you didn't like him.
No.
But here's the thing. Outside guy, huge target. What are you coming at? 6'1", 212. He ran a 4.43. I didn't think he played that fast.
No, he doesn't.
Something. No, but offered something as a big catch, a big target, big catch radius guy. I thought he did a good job catching the ball away from his body. And he can go up and get the ball over defensive backs, even if he's not stacking them. And I like him as a day three target. I was thinking about, now he ran 4.43, but I was thinking about Jake Bobo coming out of UCLA last year, and he only managed to run, he ran a 4.9 somehow. But he found his way into Seattle's roster, and when he was asked to make plays, he made plays. I think Bub Means in the right system has a chance to contribute. But again, the issue, let me ask you this. So if you're 6'1", 212, you played primarily outside in college, how hard is it to transition to doing more than just outside at the next level?
I think that they can transition. It's just different because outside you just have one guy. Where when you're in the inside, you're looking at, okay, you got a linebacker maybe coming out, a safety coming down. There's a lot more things happening a lot quicker when you're inside in the slot. And when you have to read and adjust your routes according to the coverage you're seeing, I think you just have to be it just takes some time to learn that and understand that and adjust. But you need reps at it. But I'll give you this on Bud. I think he's stiff in his lower body. I think as long as he's going vertical, that he's good. I think when he has to do comeback routes or any type of routes back to the quarterback, he is a little stiff getting into his out of his cuts that way. But the speed, I didn't think he was going to run that. But then I watched the 75-yard post versus Virginia Tech that went for a touchdown, and he ran past the secondary there. Did a 46-yard TD post for a touchdown versus Louisville. And the most impressive thing, who we're going to talk about later in the show, is one of our five-star reviews, who I really like, the corner from – and I don't want to mention, there's a corner from a ACC school that we're going to talk about and went up over top of him in the red zone to go get the ball. So – yeah, this guy is, I think, under the radar, but I think teams are going to see that. You just got to know that he's got the stiffness to go with it.
Yeah, I think Malik for me first, and then I have Bub Means and Jacob Cowing in the same area. It just depends on the type of player you're looking for, because one's inside, one's outside. But
hey, Rick.
Yes.
Will either of your guys have the greatest rookie wide receiver season ever, like Puka Nacua?
No, never. No, that's like a once in a lifetime thing. So
it just so happened to be in your lifetime as you were crushing poor Puka.
I did not crush him. You guys like put words in my mouth.
Over under, he had 1486 yards last year, Puka. 1200 this year.
For Puka? Under. Oh no. Real?
Under.
Over under 400. Please say under.
You're not gonna say under that.
No, that's just
over like, under 1,000.
Oh, under 1,000.
I say he'll get 1,000 because there's 17 games, but I'm gonna say under 1,200.
Under 1,200, between 1,000 and 1,200. All right, let me ask you this. So let's say Malik Washington, Jacob Cowing, and Bub Means, will they combine to have more yards than Puka Nacua next season?
No.
I don't think so either. And these are our best case scenarios to be the next Puka Nacua's. I almost said Puka Spielman. all right, one last question before we take a break here. Bub Means or Puka Nacua, if you can rewind your brain 12 months and forget all the things that he did in the NFL as a rookie.
Puka's issue was he was hurt a lot and didn't run fast. Puka was a better route runner, not as stiff as Bud Means is. Bud Means.
So would you have taken Puka over Bub if you had the if they were in the same class and you didn't know that Puka was going to be a superstar?
I've been a tough call. I don't know all the other stuff that I would have to know to make that type of call.
Yeah, my point is that you just don't know with these guys. And someone, like, if they are similarly ranked in the pre-draft process and one explodes and one doesn't, there's a million reasons for it. And it's hard, to your point. We're all guessing. My Butt Means comp, because this guy ran insanely well and he didn't play that fast, A.T. Perry out of Wake Forest.
Yeah, I think A.T. is – that's pretty good. I think A.T. is a little smoother, though.
Yeah.
Than Bud. But Bud now, like, since he's built differently, he's built thick, that he breaks some tackles after the catch now.
Yeah. All right.
Ryan, can you clarify his name just for the listeners? I feel like Rick is not.
B-U-B, Bub. Like you call Debo Bub? His name's Bub, B-U-B.
Bud.
Bub,
it's like B-U-B. That frog. B-U-B, Bub. Bubba?
Yes, Bubba, short for Bubba. I love the Debo. Debo's done with us, Rick. 15 days out, he's just calling out everything left and right.
All right. Someone tinkled in his Wheaties this morning. Let's move on.
Tinkle in the Wheaties. All right. Let's take a quick break and we come back. Rick's going to tell you who the next Sam Laporta is right after this. All right, Rick. Yeah, once again, you didn't take your own advice following the instructions. Debo mentioned Sam Laporta as a high-impact tight end. He ended up going to the second round. You listed two guys. That's how much you love this tight end class.
Everybody. Yeah.
You did do two for everyone. This was a layup. I didn't even have to look at the email. I knew exactly who you were going to mention with the first name. The second name, I think our buddy Pete Prisco likes Jared Wiley as well, but you went with Ben Sinnott and Jared Wiley. And it feels like Ben Sinnott had some buzz around the Senior Bowl, and we haven't heard a lot about him since, but he's still a really good player.
Yeah, I don't think he ran like in a 4.5s like Laporta did at the Combine, I think, last year. But 4.68. But he was explosive in the jumps. I just think this guy's a probably better football player, you know, than he's going to run. But then you saw the athletic test numbers, and it tells you what type of athlete he really is. Love the kid because he was a chip-on-his-shoulder guy that came out of nowhere. I think he walked on at Kansas State and made himself into a pretty good player. But I think he's one of the more complete tight ends that can line up at the line of scrimmage as a true Y, H-back, fullback, can do a lot of things with him. He's not going to be a traditional Y where he's going to knock the heck out of defensive ends off the ball, but he's going to give you everything he has, catches the ball well. He's just a good football player who's just fun to watch for me.
So 4.68, and that's plenty fast. I'll just say this quickly about Ben Sinnott. 4.68 doesn't concern anyone about a 40 time for a tight end.
No.
But what gets your attention is the 6.823 cone, which is blazing. The 40-inch vertical, which is bonkers. The 10.6 broad jump speaks to the athleticism you're talking about there.
Yeah, no, I was shocked at the test numbers that he had. And then I thought he had a good combine workout. And then he's one of those guys that if you roll the ball out in the yard, he's going to be the first one out there to pick it up and go out and compete.
All right, and Jared Wiley out of TCU.
Why I liked him was, and I think he's a Saturday guy, is because I think he is one of these receiving tight ends that can create some mismatches because I think he has enough speed and athleticism. He's just not a blocker. But with the way this type of athlete at the tight end position is evolving, I think that he has an opportunity to fill some kind of role out as a mismatch slot tight end for somebody, not in the Kincaid mold or any of those, but a poor man's Kincaid, let's say, a Saturday guy that may be able to help someone in a passing game.
Yeah, he played about two-thirds of the snap in line and a third in the slot, but to your point, at 6'6", 249, he's not going to be Gronkowski when it comes to blocking guys. But day three you mentioned, that's where I had him going early day three. One of my favorite tight ends in this class is the name I mentioned, Theo Johnson. I don't know if you come around to him. You like to grunt a lot when you're still out of Theo Johnson. I thought he had a good Senior Bowl. Excuse me. His stats at Penn State weren't great, but, I mean, you know, Debo could explain all the reasons for why that offense didn't click. And he tested well. 6'6", 259. He's 10 pounds heavier than Wiley, even though they're the same height. Ran a 4.57, which is moving. 39.5-inch vertical. Again, shows off the athleticism. I thought he was a long strider. He's a big body. I thought he blocked pretty well for his at least had the want to. Again, I mean, is there any really good blocking tight end that also excels as a pass catcher? Rick's eyes are about to bulge out of his head. You don't think the athleticism and the want to were there to block and perhaps he gets better at it?
Maybe the want to, but I think the test numbers don't show what he does on the field. I thought he was a plotter on the field. I didn't see those athletic numbers.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
On the Man, I thought, I'm looking at my notes here. I thought he showed the ability to catch the ball away from his body. I thought he had good change of direction in tight quarters. This is exactly the opposite of what you saw. Able to get off the line of scrimmage against physical linebackers when he's in line. And then I thought he could step on the gas in the middle of the field in terms of stacking these linebackers. So huge target, big catch radius. And then he had a little yak ability. You disagree with all those things.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'm
in two or three.
What'd you say, Debo?
Someone will take a swing on him because it's not a deep tight end class in day two, but he's a day three talent.
All right. That was going to be my question. So Debo's reading my mind here. He is my tight end three behind our guy, Brock Bowers and Ben Sinnott. I have him ahead of Jatavion Sanders. Who would you take first?
I don't like Jatavion either, but I'd take Sanders over him.
Okay.
And you were like, God, you've been on the Jatavion Sanders bandwagon since last July.
I want him to block, and he was a nice guy when we spoke with him on set. But
someone's coming to arrest Rick for his bad takes today.
Yeah, that's Theo Johnson. That's Theo Johnson and his sister-in-law for losing the dog this morning.
Ryan, Brenton Strange, you know, the last Penn State tight end to get drafted last year, picked 61 by the Jags. I think that surprised people. There was like a run on tight ends. Where do you think with Theo?
That's a good call, Diva. I like Strange too last year. I don't remember where you were on Strange. I thought he was a good
rocker. I like Strange. Yeah.
So I'll ask you this. So let's do 61 right at the end of the second round before the third round. Does Theo go before or after pick 61? This is a dollar bet.
After.
Okay, good. I want before. All right, give me that dollar. That's another dollar I made. I got $2 on you. I wanted a dollar bet last podcast on something. I don't remember what it was, but it was a rare occurrence. All right, next up. Ben Sinnott goes before pick 61, though, right?
I don't think any of these guys go. They're going to go before 61, but they're not worth the second round pick. But there's
really Ben Sinnott's not.
He'll probably go in. He's out of all of them. He's the one that has the best chance to go before 61.
All right. Now let's go to the Brian Branch Award, the overlooked defensive back. And you know we say it every day, and then we can't contradict ourselves. 4.58 shouldn't matter. He plays faster than that, but then he fell to the second round because we're in the 4.58. Your two guys are pretty good guys. You got Javon Bullard and Max Melton.
Yeah, Javon, I just think, is a good football player. We've talked about it. He's not going to look the best athlete when one-on-one situations in pass pro or in pass drills during practice, but all of a sudden you get into a team period, and then he's just a different player. Very instinctive, very smart, plays hard. He's more than willing as a hitter. Very aware in coverage. So I just liked everything about this player. Although he is a little undersized, his play speed does not match the play speed that we saw on Brian Branch. And we even talked about that during some of our rookie reviews during the season. But just a good football player. And I went back and watched Max Melton. This kid's unique. I think he can play outside, inside. He tested well at the combine. He has ability to create turnovers. I think he's physical. I think, if I'm not mistaken, he had a couple blocked punts or kicks during during his career. So this guy is really creeping up everybody's draft board. So I wanted to go back and watch him, and I can see why. Just he's a really good football player.
And you said that on the last podcast, and Max Melton's making a move, and that Javon's teammate Tyke Smith is also potentially making a move.
Some people said that they can't tell the difference between when they watch the two because Tyke Smith has played well.
Yeah. Again, welcome to Georgia football. So I think Javon Bullard and Max Melton both are top 60 guys.
I do.
Yeah.
I think they'll both go before the end of the second round.
And I think they have a chance to be contributors like Brian Branch was if they're, you know, utilizing the right system, yada, yada, yada. All right. My guy. Who the safety out of Washington State, Jaden Hicks, a little bigger, almost 6'2", 2'11 is what he weighed in at the combine, ran a 4.5, had a 6.88 three cone, which is impressive. I like him a little close to the line of scrimmage. I think he likes to punch people in the mouth. You can play him deep, but I think you're asking him to potentially get exposed. Rick is shaking his head violently left and right. He disagrees with that.
No, I do. I think this guy is a near the line of scrimmage safety. Yeah. To put him in the back.
No, I mean the deep part you disagree with. You don't want him. You don't want him the deep
part. I don't want him anywhere near the deep part of the field. I think he's a better football player than athlete, but I think he's going to get exposed at the next level if he has to play in the deep half or deep center of the field.
Right. No, I agree with that. And I like that he, to borrow your term, plays with his hair on fire coming downhill. Sometimes he's a little out of control, but again, you'd rather have that than him being not a wrap-up tackler or whatever. I don't know if he makes his way into day one or two. I think if you get him in day three, you're pretty excited about getting a guy who can be a tone setter at the second level and then probably help with special teams.
Yeah, he'll be a special team helper, and then they'll carve out some kind of role for him. I don't think he's a true, like I said, deep half or space player, but he is really good at the line of scrimmage from his instincts and his way he runs support and the demeanor that he plays with.
So this is my default comp for every player like this, because though he tests a little better, but I think just Talanoa Hufanga vibes. You just get a guy out there that just wants to run people over and rip their head off. You disagree?
Not the same awareness in coverage.
No, I'm fine with that. And they actually used Talanoa in space, which is one of the knocks against them before he got to San Francisco. But just in terms of the physicality and the – like, who would be a comp for Jaden Hicks? Like, who's an insane – that's more of a throwback type player at this point.
Andrew Sandejo.
When you mentioned that in the corner on the DB podcast, I thought BMAC was having flashbacks, because you mentioned that he hurt more guys on his own team than other teams. And BMAC's like, I hate guys like that. All right. Next up. Ooh, running backs. Devon Achane types. I think Achane was a third-round pick, if I recall correctly. And we both loved him coming out. We talked about him being smallish but not being afraid to run between the tackles. Who do you got as the next Devon Achane?
Jalen Wright, the runner from Tennessee, who I think is an explosive playmaker. I mean, there's holes in him, but can catch the ball, more willing at pass pro, led the FBS in plus 10-yard runs. Needs to be a little bit more physical and lower his pads on contact, but once he hits the juice, he can outrun angles in space, and he can make explosive big plays. I'm anxious to see if he can develop more as a receiver. A lot of his production was check down type routes, but I think he can be more than just a check down route running back. So I really think this guy has a chance to be a playmaker and an explosive playmaker from the position.
Is he
and not first, a lot of tread on his tire.
Is he the first running back off the board?
No, I don't think. I think everybody has these running backs all different, so it's hard to. There's not one clear-cut running back. Last year, the two clear-cut were Gibbs and Bijan Robinson. This year, I think everybody's going to have them differently according to what's your flavor.
Yep. I agree with that. I'm going to go with Bucky Irving out of Oregon, who, as your best friend Jackson Powers Johnson told you, has incredible drip, and that led to the conversation about your trip when we were speaking with him at the Combine.
I'm all dripped out.
You're all dripped out. But in addition to that, and as I revisit my notes here, I said his lateral like twitchiness is all over his tape. He is an asset in the pass game, and not just as a dump off option. You can line him up in the slot if you want to. He is undersized like Devon Achane was, but he will also run between the tackles and run hard and run through arm tackles. And there's a lot to love about his game. Again,
he's not fast.
What did he time? He plays fast. He timed 4.55. That's fast enough for a running back, right? I mean, he's not Devon Achane 4.3.
A small running back. That's different.
Yeah. 5'9", 192.
Achane ran now. He ran in 4.3s, I think.
Yeah. And the other thing, and let me ask you if this means anything when you talk about smaller running backs. His vertical was 29.5 and an under 10-foot broad. Is that something you talk about in the meetings?
Yeah. No, it's part of the analytics algorithms. That's lack of explosiveness, even though he looks explosive on tape, but there's some holes in there.
So
the limited jumps, the slower the 40 puts concern, especially at a skill position.
So before the combine, I had him as like a, if you took him at the end of the third round, early fourth, that's, I was fine with that. Is that too rich for you now?
I think he's still a good football player. You can't discredit what you saw on tape, but
yeah, exactly.
I think he's fifth, sixth round.
I'm going to stick with my original grade just because I don't want to fall in the Brian Branch trap. Maybe I'm being stubborn. That's okay. But Jalen Rice getting drafted ahead of Bucky Irvin, I think that much we can agree on because they're different players. You mentioned the lack of tread on the tire for Jalen Wright as well. Devon Achane had stayed healthy. He probably would have been in the running for some awards as well because he was special. Next up, another pie-in-the-face situation for Rick as we return to the Rams draft class, Kobe Turner. Slept on defensive lineman. That's a difference maker. once and for all, can you settle? Who do you hate more, Kobe Turner or Puka Nacua? I love your two Kobe Turner mentions here. They're both fantastic players. There's one I like more than the other, but I'll let you mention the two names. We can talk about it.
Yeah, Michael Hall Jr. from Ohio State, who I think is going to be a pass rusher, inside pass rusher. Just like I said, Kobe Turner was going to be. I just don't know if he can hold up to the run. Just like I said, Toby Turner was going to struggle versus the run. And then my other one was Brandon Fisk out of Florida State, who I had a little Geno Atkins pro comp in his game. Shorter arms, but really quick twitched off the snap and has continued to rise through this pre-draft process. And this is another guy that plays hard down in and down out. And, you know, we had him on stage. He talked about, I know I don't have the longest arms, but I have to beat the offensive lineman to a punch before they get locked on him. When you're watching him on tape, he is in the O-line's chest before they even get their hands on him, which gives him an opportunity to do what he does. I think they both struggle some to hold the point, especially versus the bigger bodies that are going to combo and double on them. But as inline pass rushers, I think they both will have an impact as rookies.
I think Braden Fisk is the more complete player. I don't think you disagree with that, even if Hall is a little more explosive.
Yeah. I think they both have issues in the run game.
Oh, you think Braden Fisk has not as...
As long as they're single block, that's different. I'm talking about there's a lot of combination blocks. There's a lot of double teams. And that's where they're going to struggle.
I mean, there's only one Byron Murphy. As you point out, he takes the knee to take on the double teams and splits them.
Yeah.
Is that a common thing to take a knee to take on double teams?
Some people teach that method.
Oh, okay.
But he is so thick through his lower, and the way he explodes up out of that was unique.
His calves are bigger than his thighs, and his thighs are enormous. That's a Byron Murphy fun fact. All right, my guy.
Ryan, I found – this is weird. Yeah. I found an evaluation that Rick had of Kobe Turner. I wanted to play it, if that's okay.
I would love to hear it. I can't wait. Rick doesn't want to hear it. I want to hear it.
Oh, God.
Can we move on? You're trash.
If you're listening, that was Terry and Arnold describing Rick's conversation with Terry on back in the fall. And maybe that's the thing. You have to you get on these players, and they suddenly explode.
I just had a heart-to-heart with him. I told him. You played
he
like
took
trash.
It to heart, and he responded.
Thing about Rick is, man, he's real.
Rick is real. Thing about Rick is, he is real. Hard not to love Therrien. There are a lot of great personalities in this draft. JPJ is the number one on your list. Therrien's probably number two.
They're all were good. JJ was good. I don't think there was one dud up there we had. That it's just my ability to bring out the good in people, the self-esteem coach that I am, just like in the self-esteem coach on this podcast. I have a role. I try to fulfill that role.
Yep. Self-esteem coach and incredibly humble, it turns out. So two for two. All right. My guy, Brandon Dorlus.
Love him.
Oh, you do?
I do love this kid. Yep. I had a hard time with not putting him on my list.
Oh, good. So he's sort of a tweener. He plays three tech. He can play some 4-eye. Even had him inside more than inside the three tech occasionally. Over the tackle at times. So he can move up and down the line. I think he weighed in the 280s. I think he plays with strong hands. He's powerfully built. I thought his his push-pull against some of the interior offensive linemen allowed him to win early in the rep. The question I have for you, Rick, is where do you end up playing him given his size?
Get him to play with a lower pad level and put him in a three technique and let him grow in there. He's going to get mashed initially against the run. But this guy has some, and I said this, is some Matabike-type traits I think he's shown that if someone develops him as an inline pass rusher, and it took Matabike 3 years before he hit full go. And I think this kid's a project. It's not going to be Matabike next year, but down the road, if you can develop him, keep his pad level low, he has enough quick twitch and athleticism to develop into a pretty good inline pass rusher.
Oh, that's high praise. I had that. I thought he moved pretty well laterally for his size, but I didn't think about Justin Matabike type twitchiness. But you think that's on the table in 2 or 3 or 4 years?
Mm-hmm. If he's willing to put in the time and effort, and it gets developed, and someone develops him that way, but I think he has enough twitch to be that type of inline pass rusher.
I had him as like a middle day two guy. Does that sound? What do you think about him?
I think he's more Friday guy, late third.
Okay.
I think someone will take a swing at him in the third round, maybe in a second, but more likely third.
I think Braden Fitz is probably the first of the three guys we just talked about off the board.
Yep.
Michael Hall Jr. or Brandon Dorlus, or it just depends on what you're looking for if you're that team.
I think it's what you're looking for. Okay. So if you're upfield one gap penetrator, you're going to probably look at Michael Hall Jr. If you're play some, I won't say two gap, but you want a bit bigger body as a base defensive end that can move up and down the line, but developing as an inline pass rusher, I think you look at Dorlus.
Next up, my favorite category. And Debo, I don't know if you knew this, but in one of Rick's side jobs, he got to speak to this young man and had to face the music. He had to face the Puka Nacua Kobe Turner music. I'm going to add another name to that in just a second. We're talking about Aiden O'Connell, reliable day three backups that can come in and start some games. Rick, you and Michael Pratt and another young man, you can start in any direction you so choose.
Well, Michael Pratt, I think, has grown on me through this pre-draft process. I thought he predetermined a lot of his throws, but I think he's a better athlete than I anticipated. I think he throws the ball. Some of the people that we talked to down at the LSU Pro Day said that he had an incredible throwing day that morning at Tulane, which actually got moved to, or the day before, they got moved to the New Orleans indoor practice facility because of the rain. So I think this guy has a chance to be a pretty good backup that may come in and win some games with you eventually. And then the other guy, Spencer, I got to give him credit. He came on in one of my other side jobs. We interviewed him for about 20 minutes. He was very mature.
To be clear, he knew who you were, correct?
Oh, he knew who I was. Yeah.
And he knew that you'd given him the business.
My other side job. Yeah, you remember Rick? He's the one that, because I told them the story.
Oh, okay. Oh, good, good. And what'd he say?
Yeah. He was laughing.
Oh, okay.
And I said, no, I'm going to tell you again, I criticized you with some of your decision-making, especially when you're in the pocket, and there's a lot of noise in the pocket. And he said, which I didn't, he said that, you know, they didn't have great protection. So he was trying to make things happen that weren't there, just trying to help his team. But, you know, he had kind of said, these are the things that I pointed out he agreed with, but he had the reasons why he was trying to do what he was doing on tape, that because it's either feast or famine with him on his decision-making, in my opinion.
Did you want to hear those reasons why, or did you want him to say something else?
I did. I mean, it was on air, so it's not, you know, having him behind a closed door and really digging into it. So I didn't get into too deep with him, but
yeah,
it's like, it's sometimes it's feast or famine, all or none. Whatever you want, but give him credit for what he did at the Senior Bowl. Give him credit for what he did at the Combine, although he didn't run as fast as I thought he would run.
No,
he ran in the 4.9s. Throwing a ball and things like that, I'm more impressed with him as we went through this pre-draft process. That I just don't know about the decision-making. That's what he has to improve.
Yeah, but the excuse I make for him with that is that it's usually the end of games. Usually he's trying to make a play because there's –
That's fine.
The offensive line was suspect.
He does it. Okay. I've seen it. It's black and white. It's right there on tape.
Well, he's still my guy. And I'm glad that he had a chance to face his accuser.
And twice.
I hope you twice. That's right. Twice. Yeah. I would take him in the third round. You would not?
Nope. Saturday.
Okay. That's fine. You would take Michael Pratt ahead of him, if I hear you correctly?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Michael Pratt had a good Senior Bowl as well, by the way. Good practices. The games got a little crazy in terms of how they were those things played out because they had to. Brayton Fisk was the first player ever to get traded from one team to the other prior to the game. So they had some guys that didn't play. So it was harder to evaluate the quarterbacks there. But I thought he showed off his athleticism and arm strength more than I knew was out there for Michael Pratt. He was injured for part of the season as well. So that had something to do with it.
Yep.
But Spencer Rattler is my guy too, in case it wasn't clear. I love me some Spencer Rattler.
God, you've been on him for 6 years.
Yeah,
he's been in school that long. We didn't do the podcast 6 years.
Yeah, and by the way, he's going to be the new co-host of the show if you keep it up. He's going to double duty. All right, that's it for the Find of the Next. But we're not done yet, Rick. We're going to take a break. We can do a few mailbag questions and even hit a 5-star prospect review or two right after this. All right, Rick, let's mailbag it up. This first question actually is a good one because we've talked about this at points through the draft process. Overall, this seems like one of the stronger draft classes we've seen in a while compared to the weaker 2022 class. How many of the 2024 prospects would go first overall if they were coming out in 2022? And that class included Trevon Walker, Derek Stingley, Aiden Hutchinson, I believe, was in that draft class as well. I'll pull it up and we'll go from there. But first of all, you agree this draft class is pretty deep at the top 65-ish picks.
Yes, very deep in the first three rounds.
And second of all, the 2022 class, which, you know, it's still early to pass judgment on overall, but that was the class that in which, you know, Kenny Pickett was the only quarterback taken in the first round. He's now on Debo's Eagles. Trevon Walker went first over Aiden Hutchinson, and here's the list here that Debo has if you're watching this on YouTube. So if we're redrafting, I think Sauce Gardner might be the first overall pick.
Second.
Who's first?
Aiden Hutchinson.
Over Sauce?
Yes.
Okay. But Aiden's had a productive career. Sauce has had an insanely productive career. Kayvon Thibodeau's been good. Ike Kwanu has not worked out yet. Evan Neal has not worked out yet. Drake London's been good. I think Charles Cross, and Garrett Wilson have been good. But let's look at this draft class and let's see.
Brian, I know you did this for social a couple weeks ago. Who did you have going number one?
Sauce.
Had a great rookie year. He was good. He wasn't as good his sophomore year. Aiden Hutchinson has been pretty consistent, and I thought took it up another notch this year.
All right, I'll give you.
Thank God I don't do these social things with you.
Oh, you would go crazy.
Right, I can share. I was going to share this year's big board and just kind of go through the list. When Rick would stop taking someone over Trevon Walker.
Oh, that's a good idea. All right, let's do that. All right, so or whoever. So if Aiden Hutchinson's your first overall pick, tell us where you're taking Aiden Hutchinson over someone in this draft class. So Marvin Harris.
No.
Caleb Williams.
No.
Malik Nabers.
No.
Drake May.
No.
Olufashinu.
No.
Jane Daniels.
No.
Dallas Turner.
Ooh, that's where it gets sticky.
Joe Alt, you're taking Joe Alt first, I would assume.
That's where it's getting sticky for me.
Oh, okay. All
right. Right in that area. 6-7.
So 6.5 is probably the over-under.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Adunze?
No, I'm taking the Aiden Hutchinson. I said, okay. Debo, right in the sticking area, 6.5.
Bad pick.
Listen, Debo. So at least 6.5 picks. It depends on the team, obviously. I might take Joe Alt over Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson is a really good player. Here, let me give you my 20. Oh, what's that, Debo?
I said Brock Bowers.
Brock Bowers or Aiden? You're taking Aiden?
Yes.
All right, Rick, here's my 2022 redraft that I did for social a few weeks ago.
Oh, God.
Sauce Gardner, number one. Oh, look what I did at number two. The Lions are taking Aiden Hutchinson. So they still take Aiden Hutchinson number two.
Real quick, just Michigan versus Michigan because he's down the big board. JJ or Aiden?
Oh.
Aiden.
Okay.
Did you say Jaden?
Sound like you said
Aiden Hutchinson. The defensive end came out of Michigan in 22. The guy that plays with his hair on fire every snap and is a tone setter on Detroit Lions defense. That one.
Oh, that one. Okay. All right. At number three, the Texans originally took Derek Stingley Jr., who, when healthy, is really good. I had him taking Trent McDuffie.
Ooh, that's pretty rich.
Oh, no, he's great, though.
He's a good player. He's better than I had him graded.
Oh my gosh, number four. I'm glad you brought this up, Debo. The Jets originally took Sauce Gardner. I had him taking Brock Purdy. Is that a good laugh or a bad laugh?
It's a laugh that I have to go do a thing here pretty soon. So let's.
What time you got to leave? How much time? Oh, you got all right. You got to leave. All right. The Giants had him taking Charles Cross at 5. The Panthers had him taking Drake London, and the Giants picked again at 7. I had him taking George Pickens.
Jeez, that's a bad redraft.
All right, you got to go check out social and see the other three because Rick's got stuff to do. All right, Rick, let's see what else we got here.
I would go check out social. I don't know what that means. Is that on YouTube? Is that on Instagram, Snapchat?
You go to the local coffee shop and buy a newspaper. It'll be in the newspaper.
Yeah. I'll go look at the print version.
Print version. All right, and then the other mailbag question, the Falcons are at 9, and we consistently have been taking an edge rush to look for the need. What if Rome Odunze or Malik Nabers is somehow there? Never?
No, I think they would talk about it, but, you know, what they did in the offseason, they went out and got Mooney. They went out and got Rondale Moore. So they have some receivers there that I think that the pass rusher is definitely the biggest need. And I think that they can come swing back and take a receiver in the second round because of the depth. But the only chance you're going to have get an impact pass rusher is where they're drafting.
Yeah. All right.
And I think they're number 8.
Number 8. And number 9 is the Bears. That's right. Number 10 is the Jets. All right. One last question. This one's for me. And I was thinking about this earlier. What if the Giants take.
Did you submit it to Debo in the mailbag?
I want to get your.
Then I'm not answering.
Unvarnished opinion. What if the Giants take Joe out at 6 and just surprise everyone?
Why?
And Malik Nabers is sitting there at 7. What do the Titans do at 7?
Oh, boy. Then Fashanu.
They picked pretty early in the second round.
Yeah, they just paid whatchamacallit, $100 million.
Calvin Ridley.
The deep threat. So, yeah, you got.
But if you're
not going to keep Will Levis upright, then what's good of having another receiver?
I get it. I was thinking about that.
So the process is, if you want to ask me a question through the mailbag portion, please submit it to Debo.
Don't go outside the regular protocol. All right.
That's not the protocol. That's not the instructions.
All right. We're going to hit a couple of these 5-star reviews real quick before Rick has to go out and battle that egg sandwich. Devon Bailey out of Utah. I think Bailey's how you pronounce it. If not, I'm sorry, Devon. Long wide receiver. Plays outside. He can play slide a little bit too. Has 27 career punt returns. He is long. He's a straight line guy. I think he's a little stiff once he gets out of the straight line. Big target, big hands catcher. I mentioned he's a little stiff in his lateral movements and change direction to come back for the ball. He'll struggle sometimes to stack outside receivers.
DBs, but you can keep calling.
God, why do I keep saying that? Yes, thank you.
Because you're like stuck on Pat and goes before the game.
But I thought he's a straight line guy. Didn't force many missed tackles. Didn't have a lot of wiggle. Long strider. I have him as a mid to late day 3 guy. Where are you on Devon?
Agree. I think he ran faster than I thought he looked on tape. I think he ran 4.47 at the combine. I think he's going to be 26 years old. This guy is an older player.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And a skill guy that's older is more of a concern than maybe an older quarterback. But 26 is pretty old, so how long are you going to invest in a late round guy before you can develop him? I think he's inconsistent in the 50-50 jump balls. I think he needs to be more physical. I think that he's a body catcher, although I will give him the credit. The last few games I watched, Washington, Arizona State, Arizona, he was a different looking player. Improved this back end of the had 3D catches in the red zones in the games that I watched. And just looked more confident as a route runner, more confident catching the ball, I think, towards the end of the season, because I didn't like him in the beginning of the season at all. But I thought this guy improved. But he's ran faster than he plays. He's older. So I think that someone may swing on him at 7. And we talk about this draft class being so deep, but when I'm looking at some of these down-the-line guys, I think, and I looked the stat up because I have another side job I got to talk about it on, is that only 58 underclassmen came out this year, which is the lowest in a decade because all of them are staying in doing NIL or doing transfer portals. So the top half of the draft is really good. But I think when you get these sixth and seventh rounds, the type of talent that we've seen in the past, because those guys are staying in school because they're making more money doing NIL money, it's not as deep down there. So
that's
you're
a good
be
point.
Swinging at guys that may in normal drafts be college free agents. Technically, this guy is a college free agent to me, but someone would probably, because depending on the depth at the bottom of their boards, may take a swing at some of these guys that in other years would be free agents.
All right, next up, Renardo Green, who you're excited to talk about. He's getting some legit buzz. I think you talk about coming out strong. The LSU game, first game of the season, he gave Malik some trouble.
Yeah, eight on eight.
He's physical. I think he runs well. He can get a little handsy at times. We talk about that all the time, and that's not an issue. Incredibly physical off the line of scrimmage. He stays in phase, not just on vertical routes, but on in-breaking and out-breaking routes. I thought he had some stiffness when he had to open his hips when the wide receiver tried to get across his face at times. But there's a lot to like. I had him, and I think he's going to go higher than this. I had him as a early day three guy.
No, wrong. This guy's going to go in day two.
Okay.
So
hey, this one guy, interception, by the way.
This guy was the most physical, one of the more physical press corners that I watched, and competitive as hell. Like, he'll come up and smack you in the run game.
Mm-hmm.
More than willing. And it was funny, the Clemson game I watched, Shipley ran over him, and about four plays later, Shipley came through the hole and he laid the wood to Shipley, the running back from Clemson. So I know this kid has a little dog in him, or whatever you want to call it. This guy is very competitive. I think the biggest thing is that he can mirror man coverage, short and intermediate, where, and you mentioned it, where he's a little tight in his hips is when the receiver gets on top of him and he gets stretched vertically down the field. And I saw the one touchdown I seen him give up was that TD against the Bub.
There you go.
Means.
Bub.
In the red zone in that game. But I really think this guy has a chance to come in. He could play slot or he could play outside, and put him up there and let him be who he is and try to beat the heck out of a receiver on a release, and then let him mirror in man coverage. And he had the one interception that was the LSU game, but he does get his hands on a lot of balls. I liked him better than your guy from Arkansas that we talked about a couple of weeks ago.
Dwight McLaughlin. Dwight did not test well, which didn't help either. So when you say day two, second round?
I think it depends on the run on these corners. But I wouldn't be shocked if he didn't go in the bottom of the second or somewhere in the second, top of the third.
All right. We'll see. That's it. Rick's got things to get to. By the way, I should mention, in case I haven't mentioned in a while, if you've subscribed to the podcast, you may have noticed a lot more activity in the feed, namely team-specific mock drafts. We'll be doing that up until the draft, and we'll hit on all 32 teams. Rick and I hit the Green Bay Packers, I believe, Rick.
I've done one of the 32, but that's fine. I'm just, I appreciate every once in a while. I'm excluded from staff meetings on this podcast, and then every once in a while I'll get to do a team.
Let me tell you something. I've done like 27 of these teams. Count your blessings. So we have a few more to hit, including the Steelers with BMAC. We just did the Jets with Lijay Doosable too, so look for those. Meanwhile, Rick, that's a wrap on episode 135, 145. Thanks to all you guys who watch, listen, and comment. Thanks to my guy, Rick. Thanks to you for producing. We will see you guys later.